We're really happy this evening to have Connor Myhill joining us, and Connor is a award-winning environmental and adventure travel journalist. He hails from Sault Ste. Marie over in Ontario. He's a frequent contributor to Explore, Cottage Life, and the Globe and Mail, and he's currently an editor-at-large with Canoe and Kayak magazine. He's also a longtime sea kayak and canoe guide on Lake Superior and an instructor of outdoor adventure leadership for regional outfitters, and also at the St. Sault College of Applied Arts and Technology. He grew up, of course, on Lake Superior's North Shore. Connor, I want to welcome you to the Roadhouse.
Hi, Buck. How are you?
I'm doing just great. You know, I when I read your book, of course, I could feel the connection. It was so obvious that you have, and I know from my own experience when I left this area, Lake Superior just—I mean—it's part of almost part of your psyche when you're gone. Do you have that same feeling as far as a drawback to this region?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a place that speaks to you in a way that few other places can. Just being such a huge body of water and having such a diverse array of moods that you can experience through the seasons on the lake. Whenever I leave, it's the place I want to come home to. I've tried to find other places to live, but I haven't been successful yet. So I think I've found a good place here.
Now, in your book, and I failed to mention that in my intro, of course, you have a brand new book out called The Greatest Lake, and in this lake, not only is it about Lake Superior, but it's specifically about the Canadian North Shore of Lake Superior, but also about all of those individuals that you've been, that are so connected to this lake as you are. Was there a specific thing or event that prompted you to write this book in your mind?
I guess for me it was having a collection of magazine stories that were focused on the area and just wanting to give them a bit more timeless quality. So say about half of the stories in the book were offshoots from magazine projects. You know how it is as a magazine or a newspaper journalist, your things tend to end up in the recycling bin. And with this, it's something more permanent and gave some stories more timeless appeal, I guess.
Now, there are a number of these stories that run through the books as chapters that are about these other individuals that you've come across that are just as connected as you are, made the book delightful to read and really gives it a personal touch. Can you tell the folks in our listening audience a little bit about some of the ones that really stand out to you that you've written about?
Yeah, as a writer, I'm drawn to characters, and starting from the west end of the lake, Maureen Robertson was definitely the most memorable character in the book for me. She's a woman in her late 70s, and for almost 20 years, she would rent a lighthouse on just east of Thunder Bay, so out on the big lake. And she was out there all by herself. Imagine a 70-year-old woman on her own for up to 6 months of the year on this remote little island. And her decorating tendencies were definitely unique. Every room in the lightkeeper's residence she had decorated with a different theme. So there was one, for instance, that she had, it was kind of an Egyptian theme, so she had all kinds of pyramids and that type of thing going on. And then she had another room that was a post office. And probably the most interesting thing for your audience, Buck, would be that she had an autographed photograph of Ronald Reagan in the post office. And it was her favorite item. So she actually left Trowbridge Island, the lighthouse where she was spending her summers in 2010, shortly after I visited her. And one of the items that she brought home with her, obviously she's getting there by helicopter, so she couldn't bring very much home with her, but one of the items was that Ronald Reagan autographed photograph, because she was just so touched that he sent her a picture of him. So she was definitely a character. Moving east, I'd always wanted to learn the story of Keith McQuaig. And the McQuaigs are based near Marathon, so kind of right at the northernmost part of Lake Superior. And his family were a family of beachcombers. And I'd heard the stories kind of secondhand, and I always wanted to spend some time with the man himself and hear the story of his father and his grandfather, who had been running boats on Lake Superior since the 1920s, I guess. And I spent a day with him in his boat. He has a big aluminum-hulled, double-hulled vessel that he uses for transporting hikers and kayakers and researchers and that type of thing around the lake. And I spent a day with him kind of as his mate on the water, and had some great stories from him. So certainly moving all the way along, even towards here in Sault Ste. Marie, there's a few neat store owners that I profiled who've been running kind of tourist trade shops closer to the Sioux here. And just people whose stories I've wanted to hear for years. And this kind of gave me a really good excuse to spend some time with these people.
You know, as I was reading about Robertson, I believe that's Trowbridge Island Lighthouse just off of Sibley Point, is it not?
That's right, yeah. So right off of the old mining community at Silver Island.
Mm-hmm. Which is relatively close to us here, and many of our listeners are familiar with that. I just wanted to drive up there and paddle out there to see her, because she comes so alive in that little story. And then towards the end of it, I read that she left there in 2010.
She did, yeah. So what's happening here in Canada right now is that our government has chosen to offload its lighthouses, I guess. They're not going to turn them off, but basically they've made them available to people, to Canadians, to run as nonprofits. So it's kind of a petitioning process, and if you come up with a business plan, you can own a lighthouse. And she kind of felt that at her age, she didn't really want to be jumping through those hoops. Interestingly, though, there's a group in Thunder Bay that just came up. They're called Friends of Trowbridge Island Lighthouse, and they're looking to secure a number of these lighthouses that are available. So Maureen might have a second chance to get out and use her decorating magic on another one of these lights.
We're speaking with Connor Myhill, and he is an environmental and adventure travel journalist. He's the author of The Greatest Lake, which is a new book is just out, and I should let you mention where folks can find it, just about anywhere, I would assume.
Yeah, I guess for American listeners, the best spot to find it would be on Amazon.com. Mm-hmm. Here in Canada, it's distributed through Dundurn Press is the publisher, so if you go to their website, you can actually find the book for order there as well, so Dundurn Press.
Now, you started out as a guide and sea kayaker and canoe guide when you were quite young. Some of the stories in the book actually have to do with loss and the loss of, if we're talking animals, it'd be the loss of habitat, but we're talking about you as a guide and adventurer, and in some cases through changes in Canada with hydropower, loss of some of your favorite areas to play.
Mm-hmm. I should preface this by saying that here on the Canadian shore, we're really lucky in that we have a lot of protected areas, but a few have come under stress in my lifespan, and one of them was the White River, and it flows into Lake Superior east of Marathon, just east of Marathon. It would be maybe a four-hour drive from the Minnesota border. And I first paddled it in 2002. I went with a good friend of mine, Chris, and he had been paddling the river for a number of years, and he knew where the old portage was around Mbata Falls. And over the years, I guess they had done some logging in that area, so the portage was rerouted to go on the logging road. But Chris knew the original trail, and it was neat. You carried over around a small waterfall, and then you kind of white-knuckled your way through this gorge, and you could tell it ended in a big drop. You had that horizon line, and pulled into a big eddy, so a big pool, right at the very brink of the falls, and then you carried along right alongside the top of the gorge. So immediately I was quite enamored by Ambata Falls. And I always knew that the proposal was out there to dam it. And then sure enough, within a couple of years, they began working on it. And it was disappointing. And I know we need electricity, but I think there's better places to get it closer to population. It's kind of always been my argument. But anyway, so my wife and I returned, and we paddled that river. And by chance, we were the last people to paddle it before those turbines were actually activated in the hydroelectric facility. So it was kind of a bittersweet trip. In many ways, the river was the same, the upper river, and then, you know, you arrive at Ambata Falls, and things look the same until you get on that portage and kind of come out of the trees, and there's this massive powerhouse there, and power transmission lines and that type of thing. So, yeah, it was a memorable trip, not for the right reasons, though.
We're speaking with Connor Myhill, and Connor is an environmental and travel journalist and author of a book that's just come out called The Greatest Lake, and of course that's referring to our own Lake Superior, and specifically in his case, the Canadian North Shore of Lake Superior. Connor, as I mentioned earlier in our conversation, you have been a canoe guide, a kayaking guide, for a number of years, and I've mentioned over the course of these years that to me one of the hardest jobs out there is to be a guide, whether it's a fishing guide or a canoe guide. You're only as good as that day that person is with you. Can you tell us a little of the pressures that you felt over the years trying to live up to that?
I guess the biggest thing about traveling on Lake Superior, especially in a small vessel like a sea kayak, is that I kind of liken it to walking on a dragon's back. The Anishinaabeg people have the story of Mishipishu in Lake Superior being the malevolent water god. And the lake is unpredictable. You never know what the weather is going to do. I've seen it change pretty quickly. And even after a lifetime on the lake that I've spent, I still don't exactly know what it's going to do. So that's always the biggest challenge. Unfortunately, when you're running a guided trip, you have a set schedule that you like to adhere to, and schedules and nature don't work particularly well. So always watching the weather. And kind of planning my day, so if I need to get up early, I'll rouse people early and we'll get on the water first thing in the morning. I've had a few memorable evening paddles, paddling into the sunset. Sometimes that's the only good time to go, and if you're on a schedule, you need to take advantage of the good times to paddle. But it's an interesting profession, guiding. It's one of those things where a lot of people get into it. A lot of my colleagues were university and college students, and that's definitely when I got into it. I was just finishing up high school, and it seems like a really idyllic lifestyle, and it, in many ways it is, but it's very difficult to make a living doing it. So I've been lucky to supplement my guiding with my writing and my teaching at the college and kind of doing a whole bunch of different things, and that's allowed me to make a career out of a real seasonal job, and I feel thankful for that.
Now, in one of the chapters, you talk about your life as a guide and experienced along the way maybe a little disillusionment about some of the facets of guiding the more inexperienced paddlers out there, specifically, you know, the expectations of gourmet meals instead of maybe the beautiful sunset.
It's changed over the years. I remember when I first started, it was kind of around the year 2000, and this was when sea kayaking was really taking off, and the notion of guided trips. So we had rank beginners, and we'd be launching at a place called Gargantua Harbor on Lake Superior's eastern shore. It's maybe 120 miles north of my home here through St. Marie, and very rough beach to launch off of, often going out into breaking waves. So you have people who have never been in a kayak before, and you're kind of throwing them out there into breaking waves. And that was always exciting. You often had a few tip-overs in that type of situation. People vary. There's usually, in one summer, you know, if I was doing a lot of trips, I'd have one trip that I wouldn't really think back too fondly upon. But lately, it's been a lot of people who I've had on trips before, so people who have traveled with me two or three or four times even, and it's become more like doing trips with friends, because they know what I'm all about, and I know what they're all about, and we kind of have our own little traditions that we keep up. So there's one character in the book who I describe, his name is Jerry, and he's from Wisconsin, Milwaukee, and he just loves Lake Superior. He's been coming up here for close to 25 years now, I guess. So he has his own connection to the lake, and I have my connection to the lake, and he's very respectful of it, and really that's what you need to be to travel on the lake with good style, is respectful of the lake and what it can do, and realize that you're on a different schedule when you're out there.
We just have a few minutes left in the interview here, Connor. We're speaking with, Connor Myhill, and as I mentioned, Connor is a adventure travel journalist. He's the author of The Greatest Lake, a new book just out there. And as I read your book, of course, we don't have time to cover all of the interesting characters that you cover in the book. I did want to convey that I learned so much about the area I didn't know about, one specific chapter being about backcountry skiing and over by the Sioux with 700 vertical feet of skiing is something I didn't know was out there. And, of course, many other things that you cover that are so much fun, such as abandoned cabins and the saunas that line the Canadian North Shore, free for anybody, and all of those things. But there is one other aspect to this book that I was so impressed with, and that was the environmental challenges that you tackle in this book, whether it's mining or it's global warming or it's aggregate mining. There's some real challenges as far as keeping this environment as it is, and as I mentioned, we don't have too much time here, but maybe you would want to touch on that just briefly.
Yeah, I think, like everywhere these days, there's environmental challenges that we're facing, and Lake Superior certainly isn't immune to these things. I think the biggest thing that has the potential to really change the lake at a large-scale level is climate change, and people don't realize the lake is warming as rapidly as it is. There's research out of University of Minnesota Duluth that shows that it's already increased in temperature about 2.5 degrees Celsius in the last 30 years. And that holds great ramifications for the ecological communities that are both in the lake, in the water column, and along the shoreline. So one of the things I always look for when I'm sea kayaking are Arctic disjunct plants. And it's pretty neat to see these guys. They're hardy little plants that literally sprout right out of the rock, and they're tough. They're used to growing kind of either at alpine elevations or in the tundra, so very durable but very sensitive to warming climate. And the only reason why they're there is because the water has been so cold since the last ice age. So I always show people that and say, you know, in 25, 30 years, we'll be lucky to see these again. And for me, the environmental stuff, it's a challenge to write about in a way that inspires people yet also gets the message across. And for that, I guess I take cues from Sigurd Olsen, a writer from your side of the lake. And if I could do half as good a job as he did inspiring me to care, I'll be well on my way to getting my message across.
We've been speaking with Connor Myhill, and Connor has just published a new book called The Greatest Lake. We've been talking about that book and also his life. Connor, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight, and I've really enjoyed reading your book. I hope that we'll talk to you again at some future time.
Thank you. I hope so.